Good afternoon and welcome to the LaRouche Show. It is Saturday, October 21st, 2006. I'm Harley Schlanger and I'll be your host today. Two of our last three shows have focused on the intelligence that we've been developing about the role of Lynn Cheney as one of the leaders of the fascist war party, which is committed to the destruction of the nation state, including the United States. The Executive Intelligence Review has been carrying updates on this intelligence, and the next issue will be the same. We're going to have more and more as it develops. At the same time, members of the LaRouche Youth Movement have been deploying on the campuses of this country with a pamphlet, the title of which is Joseph Goebbels on Your Campus? John Train and the Banker's Secret Government. And what we've discovered in looking at this is that this is a grouping which is literally forming an intimidation, a group to intimidate professors and students and to develop an apathetic acceptance of the policy of imperial warfare. Today we're going to be hearing from a roundtable with members of the LaRouche Youth Movement who are conducting this campaign in the context of an election, which is 2 weeks and 4 days from now. So before I bring in the LaRouche Youth Movement panel, I want to give you a little bit of a background update from the top so that we have a clear sense of exactly why Lynn Cheney is deploying her husband at this point for an escalation of war. Now, it should be clear from coverage in the regular press in recent days that the Iraq war is not going all that well, contrary to what Dick Cheney says, that the numbers of American casualties, the numbers have escalated so far this month, that the number of attacks are increasing. There's no security anywhere. The strategy of securing Baghdad is a complete flop. Furthermore, Afghanistan increasingly is in the hands of the Taliban. So the whole strategy of protecting the United States from terror by introducing a so-called democratic movement in Afghanistan and Iraq has been a failure. The Bush administration from the beginning lied about the situation. Their policies have been oriented not so much at really Iraq and Afghanistan, but at Europe and the United States to prepare people to accept an imperial dictatorship under Anglo-Dutch, Venetian, French synarchist domination. That is police states subordinating the nation states to cartels, financial cartels, insurance cartels, pharmaceutical cartels, oil and raw material cartels. This is what fascism really is. Now, at the same time, the war is collapsing. The war effort is a disaster. The economy is in a shambles. The housing bubble has now popped. It's not going to be a soft landing. We're gaining speed day after day. The auto sector, as LaRouche warned in February 2005, the auto sector in this country is being dismantled, and with it, the machine tool sector is virtually being demolished. Hedge funds are imploding. There are debates on can we save the system going on in the back rooms of banks and bankers' conferences. So is anyone dealing with these problems? No. The Bush and Cheney crowd are preparing for more war. Now, we have this from one of the architects of the war party itself, namely George P. Shultz, the guy who put together this administration. He gave a speech at Stanford on October 14th, and he was asked, well, what should we do? Because he said, we keep making demands, and we say such and such is unacceptable, but then it happens. What should be done? Now, Shultz, the man who was behind the fascist coup of Pinochet in Chile in 1973, said, we have to follow up. We have to shoot. When I joined the Marines, a sergeant gave me a gun and said, never aim at anyone unless you're willing to pull the trigger. Today we see the continual unwillingness to pull the trigger. It is on behalf, he says, crisis after crisis, you have to follow through and shoot. Now, he's talking about North Korea, he's talking about Iran, he's talking about Darfur. You have to shoot, he said. This is the war party. They're still going for war with Iran, even while the existing wars are failures, even while their financial system is collapsing, the ability to supply the troops, the logistics in depth, it doesn't exist. So what's wrong with these guys? Now, to top it off, as we're taking on these networks on the campuses, we had a very almost unbelievable speech given at UCLA, University of California at Los Angeles, last week. And I say almost unbelievable because once you know who these networks are, how they work, it's not so unbelievable. A man named Yaron Brook, who's the executive director of the Ayn Rand Institute, said the following. He said, Islamic totalitarian states pose a severe threat to the security of the United States. He said, the way to defeat these regimes is to kill up to hundreds of thousands of their supporters. Now, these are his words. To kill up to hundreds of thousands of the supporters of these regimes. And he added this would shrink popular support for extremist ideas to a small minority, instead of what he said is 40%, which he claims support these regimes now. Now, this is not just a lone madman who's off his medications. This is what we're dealing with a network that we've presented the last few weeks on this show, starting with John Train, a Wall Street banker, who as part of his function, he has conducted a ongoing witch hunt against Lyndon LaRouche, which has included several assassination attempts. This is what Lynn Cheney has set up with Campus Watch, to make sure that dangerous ideas such as war is not good, dangerous ideas such as you shouldn't kill large numbers of civilians, they're trying to suppress those ideas so that students will just shrug their shoulders and say there's nothing you can do about it. Now, before I bring on our panel, I want to read you one further quote from one of the collaborators of David Horowitz, of Dr. Yaron Brook, a man who's the education program director for the Ayn Rand Institute. His name is Ankar Gatte, and he wrote an article about why there's no such thing as an innocent in warfare. That is, civilians of the countries we're attacking are not innocents, but they are acceptable targets. The article is subtitled, A Free Nation Should Not Let the Fear of Causing Civilian Casualties Hinder Its Self-Defense. And he says that we must recognize that our government's concern, shared by many Americans, about killing civilians is morally mistaken. Okay, he said it's morally wrong to worry about killing civilians. And in case you thought maybe this is a misprint, here's how he ends this article. War is terrible, but sometimes necessary. To win the war on terrorism, we must not let a mistaken concern with innocent civilians deter us. As a free nation, we have the moral right to defend ourselves, even if this requires mass civilian deaths. That's Ankar Gatte, who will be speaking in Boston tomorrow afternoon at a conference that featured last night Dr. Yaron Brook, the person who said we have to kill hundreds of thousands. Now, I hope we have one of our correspondents from Boston on the show with us. Is there someone from Boston on the line?
This is Pavel here.
Pavel, okay, so you made it.
I did.
All right, so you heard what we've been discussing in terms of this fascist war party and their policy of extermination. I understand yesterday we went to Tufts University, where this conference is being held, and got out a large number of the pamphlets. Is Joseph Goebbels on your campus? Why don't you give us a quick report on what we did and what happened at the event?
We started an intervention even before before the person spoke, because we already had an idea of what he represents from our previous encounters with him in L.A. and places like that, that he's not somebody who's interested in any kind of honest debate. So that approach doesn't really work with him. He's just saying, if you don't agree with what I'm saying, you're morally incapable of saving your nation. So if you try to stop me, then maybe we should kick you off of your campus. If you try to use physical means, we should kill you. So what we did is before the intervention, we actually, had a few people who were asking him questions on his remarks of exterminating hundreds of thousands of Muslims as a means to supposedly defend the United States. And also during the event itself, we had a number of LaRouche Youth Movement members who were bringing in remarks during his talk, and he tried to brush them off. And what we saw is that the crowd actually cheered for him. The crowd, cheered for the Nazi policies that he was advocating. Fortunately, though, we were probably more than half of the presence there, so it doesn't really.
It was a small gathering then.
Yeah, so it doesn't really have that much of a movement. And
well, let me just interrupt here and make this point. What they're doing is they're trying to recruit the shock troops. This is not really something that will recruit large numbers, but if they get enough people who are aggressive enough, they think they can silence the others. So they're not that interested in building a mass-based movement as they are in creating the shock troops. So go ahead, Pavel.
He didn't really see the kind of intervention that we were bringing in he was just trying to brush it off. But afterwards there was a very heated discussion between LaRouche Youth Movement members and a lot of the people who were present there. And so we did actually have an impact, even though, a lot of these people didn't wish to admit it. And for example, one thing that was interesting is that Yaron Berg had previously remarked that he doesn't know who David Horowitz is. I believe in one of these LA interventions, when he was asked by some of our members there. But now, during this event at Tufts, yeah, he suddenly started talking about, I don't completely agree with David Horowitz. Let me tell you about his, ISI. Let me tell you about his, his institute that he's leading. So he actually, this is something that apparently he was actually destabilized by what we were bringing up. And there are a number of tactical things that were interesting in what he was saying. For example, the typical basis of the argument that he was making was, what has been noted by LaRouche and other of his associates as this Reesian choice. Because what he was pretty much saying is, you either accept killing hundreds of thousands of Muslims, or we're going to have something worse. We're going to have a destruction of civilization. This was the basis of his argument. He was also, apparently he didn't want to be associated with people like Horowitz. He didn't want to be associated with George Shultz. He tried to criticize the Bush administration.
Well, you know what the criticism of the Bush administration is by the Ayn Rand Institute, which is that they should have used nuclear weapons already against Iraq.
Yeah.
Now, Pavel, what you're describing is interesting because this is the essence of sophistry. The way you tell that Brooke is lying is his lips are moving. These people are incapable of telling the truth. His organization is completely interconnected with the collegiate newspapers, with the Campus Watch organization. We'll get to Nick Walsh in a moment, who will tell us about what we're running into at UCLA, where you have a small group of these people who represent the whole of this right-wing network. But it's worth noting, let me just read another quote from one of these guys who I think is also speaking at this Boston conference, a professor named John Lewis, who wrote an article in April of this year in their magazine called Capitalism Magazine, and it's called The Moral Lesson of Hiroshima. And he says that the effects of the nuclear bombs that were detonated on Hiroshima and Nagasaki were so beneficent, so wide-ranging, and so long-term that the bombings must be ranked among the most moral acts ever committed. He described the destruction of innocent civilians by the hundreds of thousands in Japan with these two nuclear bombs as being a sublimely moral action. And so what they say they have differences with Horowitz and others. Well, I think also at this Boston conference will be Daniel Pipes, who's one of the most aggressive of the neocons in the Horowitz-Lynn Cheney network, who also is a frequent collaborator of Dr. Yaron Brook. Do you have anything else immediately you want to just tell us on Tufts before we move on? Because we'll be coming back to what we're doing in Boston. But anything else, Pavel?
Yeah, I also was at this conference that you're referring to. It's this morning. It's going to continue later in the day. And Lewis was there. Daniel Pipes was there. Actually, I just asked a question. I asked Daniel Pipes a question. And what Pipes was bringing up, what he was saying is that nonviolent, or what he called legal Islamism, is much more threatening than terrorism. And he was referring to, he was saying that this is a subversion of Western culture. And he was saying this is the great danger. And he referred to the Prime Minister of Turkey, Erdogan, as one of these dangerous legal Islamists. Now, he's obviously targeting Turkey immediately. He was referring to nations like Algeria, Egypt, Syria. These are the nations he was referring to. And he was also saying, you've got to wage a fight against a cultural warfare. That's pretty much
Pavel, the point. He essentially is pushing the clash of civilizations then.
Yeah. He was trying to pretend. I mean, he's somebody, being an experienced sophist, obviously. He was somebody who was trying to say, oh, well, the way we're going to do that is we're going to promote Western or modern Islamists. We're going to promote this kind of culture among Islamic nations. Something that, for example, Yaron Brook referred to. He was saying we've got to let these Muslims kill each other until they're rendered impotent.
The obvious question that emerges is, since when is Western culture based on the idea of mass murder and suppressing dissent and suppressing discussion? For them, this is the Western civilization of Torquemada and the Nazis. And this is the point we have to make. You're listening to The LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, October 21st, 2006. We're just 11 days or 10 days away from the next webcast by Lyndon LaRouche, where he'll be taking up these questions. And, of course, the November 7th election is looming. It looks like we can get a Democratic Party landslide. The question is, what will the policies be? And that's one of the reasons we're taking up this battle on the campuses, because the next generation of leadership is going to come from young people. And at this point, outside of the LaRouche youth movement, there's nothing moving on the campuses. So, Pavel, we'll come back to you. I'd like to bring on Nick Walsh, who's in Los Angeles. And Nick is one of the members of the LaRouche Youth Movement who has been spearheading the organizing drive at UCLA, where you have a group called Logic there, which is part of this network of Ayn Rand, of right-wing neoconservatives. Nick, you've had some close encounters with these guys recently. What are these guys represent?
Well, it's interesting because at UCLA, we've been organizing at UCLA our youth movement for, you know, 6 years, 7 years since it started. And there's always been a really, we've always had, it's a huge university, 30,000 or something students, and you'd think we'd be able to recruit a lot more people than we have from there over the years. And there's always been a certain type of operation, a certain kind of gossip that's kind of gone on in the campuses behind closed doors against LaRouche. And we've been aware of it. We've never been able to really identify exactly how it's run. And it has been a obstacle to us really making certain breakthroughs and getting students at that campus political. We've tended to refer to it as the University of California at Laputa. because it's almost like you're in a bubble, a floating island when you go to that campus over the years. Now, the other interesting thing is we debated this group that you're bringing up, Harley, the Logic group. Sky and Cody debated them about, I don't know, it was a year ago maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And this was before LaRouche really put the focus like he is now in this train, Lynn Cheney, Campus Watch, Gestapo operation. But we debated them, and the kid near the end of the debate ended up coming out and saying, well, I think that even if people in New Orleans, for example, if the private water companies want to charge $5 a bottle for water and make money, then they can do that. And Cody said, well, then what if people die? Because you're going to have hundreds of thousands of people that can't afford that price. He goes, well, then they should die. They should die if they –
and Nick, this was in a public debate, right?
This was in a public debate. It's on videotape on our website. People can watch it. And obviously we were struck then, not knowing everything we know now, we were struck then with just a really fascist outlook that this group represented. The funny thing is the UCLA campus, just as an example, I think a lot of the campuses are like this, we're finding, but UCLA, just to look at it pedagogically, is a mainly Democrat, liberal kind of, you could call it left, you know, whatever, campus. Yet the people that tend to determine and kind of dominate the discussion is this little fringe minority of freaks. The Logic group, the Ayn Rand group, the kids that have been attacking us lately. So, and this is what we've been addressing with this new pamphlet that LaRouche has put out, you know, these Goebbels on your campus. All of a sudden, there's a real eruption amongst different circles in the professors and the students of a certain kind of realization or a beginning realization that there is an actual, that this is a targeted type of Gestapo-style operation being run on the campus through these groups. We've gotten a lot of discussion. I'll just say on Monday, we went, I think it was just this past Monday, we went with almost the whole LYM to UCLA, and we got there pretty early, about 7:30 a.m., and we distributed something like 60 or 70 bundles to the classes where kids were going to be having class in the morning. And then we had a chorus from about 11 till 1 in the middle of the campus where all the students are marching through during the lunch breaks between classes and whatnot. And by the end of the day, we've also been meeting with professors. Over the past couple of days, about 1 out of 4 or so students, 1 out of 3 students have now tended to have seen or read the pamphlet. A number of teachers that have been targeted by Horowitz personally, one teacher said that she'd like to have a forum. She contributed to us actually while we were singing. This is one of the people on the Dirty 30 list. And said, yes, I know this is going on. I would be willing to sponsor a forum if you guys wanted to do some speaking on this subject. The radio station at UCLA wants to have us on, a couple of our youth members, to debate someone that would maybe have the opposing view. The school newspaper now wants us to write I think they're going to allow us to put an op-ed in the paper refuting or challenging the idea that Logic should even exist as a group on the campus or that Yaron Brook can come speak, pushing genocide. And this is just a different – the fact there's almost like a sleeping – quality that's being awakened through this flank that LaRouche has identified, that people are saying, wow, like it's not, the apathy is not just some organic, natural thing where a few right-wingers just tend to dominate the discussion on a mostly so-called left campus, or whatever you want to call it, Democrat campus. Well, I think you're having this realization that this is actually being run by the same people pushing the war on terror.
Yeah.
And it's quite interesting.
One of the points we should make here is mm-hmm. that this next material that comes out with the quotes from a number of people tied to the Ayn Rand Institute, which is also tied to this Hovhannissian, the Bruin Standard, this right-wing throwaway newspaper, that this is one small incestuous group. And but I think it's important that we get across to people that it's not just that they're saying that the campuses are too liberal or something of that sort, which is the line of Campus Watch, is that the left-wingers on campus are undermining the morale of the country in the war on terror. It's that the policy of the people saying that is more war. And this is something I don't think the students we're talking to get yet, that Iraq was not a mistake, it was an intention to put this country at war and to have a long war, as Rumsfeld said, as Cheney said, which includes not just Iran, but could include China and Russia, and will go to the level of nuclear weapons. Do you think the students we're talking to at UCLA, Nick, get that yet?
Not totally. I think it's interesting. A lot of the students, there's a real heavy deluge of popular opinion. You know, listen to what's being whispered about around you. Specifically at that campus, it's always been very heavy. This sense of I think based on what the people, what the consensus around me is, what's being whispered about by people. But the response that we have been getting from professors and from some of, I guess you'd call more of the people that are responsible for kind of putting out ideas, teachers, the people that have this radio show, the people that run the Daily Bruin, people that are actually a bit more cognizant of, you know, maybe people that are getting attacked more directly, are responding. We've been in touch with many teachers at different campuses, including down in San Diego. And I think the students, I think, are going to have to get it. I think the singing work, for example, that we're doing is really provoking a lot of people. I don't think they understand why we're singing yet, but a lot of people have come back towards the end of the day and said, I heard you singing. What was that about? I wanted to talk to you guys. One other thing, too, about what you said about this Ayn Rand, this small group that's all interconnected, is in the paper, the Bruin Standard paper that slandered us, that had the front page attack on us as being a cult. The centerfold of that paper was an interview with one of the spokesladies for the Ayn Rand group. And she was saying in that paper, almost quoting verbatim Don Rumsfeld, that if you criticize the war, you're like an appeaser of Hitler. We need to defeat Islamofascism. So you're right. I mean, it's very clear that this is one operation.
We're going to have to take a short break. When we come back, we'll have Tarana Dorsey from Seattle, and we'll continue the roundtable discussion of the campaign to defeat the war party. If you have a question or want to participate in the discussion here, you can send us an email at radio@larouchepub.com. That's radio@larouchepub.com. This is the LaRouche Show. We're live every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time. You are hearing about this pamphlet we put out, Is Joseph Goebbels on Your Campus? We've produced 500,000. We probably should get out more than that between now and the election. So if you want to get a copy for distribution, it's a LaRouche Pack pamphlet. You can call us at 800-929-7566. I'll give you that number again later in the show, 800-929-7566. If you want to get your friends listening to the LaRouche Show and they weren't on today, it's available on the larouchepub.com website, and it's available on the left-hand side of the page. You'll see where it says the LaRouche Show. You click on there, and all of the past shows, including two of the last 3 weeks, we've had Tony Chaitkin on, a historian with the LaRouche movement, who has done a lot of fascinating research into these interconnecting networks. So give us a call, 800-929-7566. So we're back with the program for today, October 21st, 2006. I want to just again emphasize the importance of the elections. The problem we have with the Democratic Party, as Lyndon LaRouche said the other day, is that the Republicans are likely going to lose on November 7th. In fact, it could even be a landslide, returning the control of the House of Representatives and the Senate to the Democrats. But it won't be that the Democrats have won, because many of these Democrats are running horrible campaigns. And the issues that we're discussing on this show of imperial warfare versus global economic development, of scientific and technological progress as opposed to depression collapse, these issues are not being discussed on the campaign trail. So the fight of developing a leadership is exactly what the LaRouche Youth Movement represents. So I'd like to bring in our Northwest correspondent right now, Tarana Dorsey from Seattle. Tarana, how are you doing?
Oh, pretty well.
So what's going on up in the great Ecotopia of the Northwest?
Well, a couple things. One thing similar in a sense to what Nick was describing with the response and the approach to UCLA. We have the University of Washington up here, which is, you know, has about 40,000 students and is the main university in the Seattle area. And in the past couple of years, there's been a sort of a similar response from the university. But what's interesting is with this, the introduction of this pamphlet, is Joseph Goebbels on your campus. It's a lot different than, you know, our Social Security, our campaign against the privatization of Social Security, or some of the campaigns that we've waged in the past, where now this is very subjective. And we saturated that campus just this last week with around 2,500 of these pamphlets so far is what we've gotten here. And we've found that up to this point on the University of Washington especially, but also at Western Washington University and some of the community colleges that we've gone to so far, the response from the professors has been much more open than in the past, but in a way where a lot of the professors are scared to talk to us. Like, they're very interested by the pamphlet, but then they say, okay, well, I'll take this to read it, and they kind of, you know, scamper away. But the response of the students has been twofold. There's one where a lot of the students, especially at the University of Washington, are saying, you guys aren't allowed to say that. You know, you can't say that Lynn Cheney and David Horowitz don't care about the academic freedom of students, or you can't say that they're fascists or that this is like the Gestapo. So, which is pretty interesting, because it's exactly what this apparatus is doing, which is saying there are certain things that you can't say, and if you do, we're going to target you and get rid of you. And the second response from the students is one of complete surprise. Just, you know, I think their university bubble land was shattered, and they're saying, oh, my God, are you serious? This is actually happening? And, you know, taking the pamphlet, taking extra to get out to their friends and family. So that's just initially the response that we've gotten so far.
So we are cracking through some of the feigned apathy that you run into on that campus, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it really is, like I was saying, this idea that a lot of students have where they're somehow safe from what's happening in the outside world because mm-hmm. they're, you know, just the innocent students going to university to get the degree, and they don't have to think about what's happening in the world. But now, when we're demonstrating to them right up front to their faces that this operation reaches everywhere, especially the campuses, especially because of the time period right now, and the importance of the youth population in determining what happens, that they're not exempt from what's going on at all, and they're having to face that, like it or not. And it freaks some of them out, and it challenges other ones who are, you know, wanting to do something to act.
Well, it should freak them out that there are people running around saying killing hundreds of thousands of Muslims would be a good policy. Pavel, did you find from the organizing on the campuses in Boston that people were surprised to hear that an advocate of mass murder was speaking at Tufts?
Well, I haven't I haven't really met too many students who have what it seems to me is that a lot of students try to, you know, they would admit things like that, but they wouldn't want to recognize their implications. They, mm-hmm. I mean, like many students wouldn't actually, you know, be freaked out. They would try to have some kind of an academic discussion, you know. Well, maybe it's not good that somebody is trying to do that, but on the other hand, though, you know, pretty much any student you meet on the campus, there's a good chance that he has either talked to his friends about La Rouche, or he has met us, or he has seen our pamphlets. So there's definitely a large impact of what we're doing, but we still have a challenge of getting students to recognize why is it that these campuses are tolerating fascism? How come you have all these professors and students who are tolerating what Lynn Cheney and people like David Horowitz have introduced on their campuses?
So if you think about it, in Germany under Hitler, it wasn't until 1942, January 1942, that there was a conference at Wannsee where the Nazi leaders said, okay, now our policy is a final solution to the Jews. They had been killing large numbers of Jews in concentration camps, but it was in 1942 that the decision was made to go for mass extermination. But it was made privately, in quiet, among a handful of leaders. They did not go out to the public and say, starting now, we're advocating the extermination of hundreds of thousands of people. So here you have a brazen, blatant statement coming from a person, Dr. Brook, who thinks that he can go out publicly. In fact, I understand on Fox television, he said we should flatten Fallujah. Instead of sending troops in there in Iraq, instead of sending troops in there to fight door to door, just flatten the whole city, kill everyone there. And even Bill O'Reilly, who himself is a fascist, said that sounds like a Nazi policy. But in general, why do you think, I mean, they've been able to get away with this, I guess. Nick, what's your thought? I mean, do you find a bit of a shock effect from some students when they hear that this is being advocated on their campus?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think we've been hitting with the actual pamphlet only for, let's say, really 1 week of classes, because we just got it last weekend. And already, it's a very short period of time, in a sense, a few days, we've been getting this thing out. I mean, it really is it's the center of the discussion. There's only, you know, 30 or 35, let's say, of us organizers that are out there, let's say, at a campus like of UCLA that has thousands of people. And I think a lot of people are talking about this thing. Obviously, you can't be in every single discussion, but there's a kind of ongoing awareness amongst a lot of people that they've seen the pamphlet, they've heard about it. I mean, they know that we've been there, too. We're really the only political movement that's organizing, that's actually representing ideas on these campuses, and a lot of the youth know that. Or maybe they at least subconsciously know it. I mean, you know, with this, other than us, you get clubs that are just inviting you to a barbecue. I mean, the young Democrats there the other day, for example, who were near us when we were organizing, the guy had his shirt off and he was dancing to hip-hop music. You know, and girls were just touching his pecs. You know, I mean, he was going, I love college. I mean, that's the Bruin Democrat group. But the thing that we're bringing now, like what Toronto was bringing up, is that it's being made very clear now with this pamphlet, kind of puts it all on the table, that the reason why the youth on this campus, for example, or many campuses, aren't leading demonstrations, let's say, against a genocidal policy being stated by Brooke on the campus, or aren't organizing rallies to impeach Cheney, aren't having forums to debate why we should impeach Cheney or not impeach him. Why none of this is going on is because of this McCarthyite, you know, Gestapo thought control intimidation. It's not just because kids 18 to 25 are just naturally apathetic. You know, it's not just because youth are just, well, that's just how youth these days are. They just don't really care. It really is and it's deeper than just, you know, a guy on a campus. I mean, it's something that goes back to the way we were raised and the way the culture operates. But I think this is very provocative for people. It's getting under people's skin. And I think people have to start thinking, well, why is there no motion when the crimes of this administration are so out there, they're so extreme? You got a guy saying, I mean, imagine if someone at the campus came and said, well, we should, in order to improve the economy, we should kill hundreds of thousands of Jews. And this is what this guy said. He just said Muslim. He said, well, in order to do this, we're going to have to kill hundreds of thousands of Muslims. And the LaRouche Youth Movement, we're the only ones actually really saying this is insane. And I don't know. I'm optimistic that this is going to generate a response. All I can say now is that there's a stir kind of brewing on the campuses based on what we're doing, and we're going to continue next week. We're going to hit even harder with this thing.
Well, Nick, I think one of the things that we should also keep in mind is this report that came out last week that said, in fact, that hundreds of thousands of Iraqis have been killed,
mm-hmm.
that the figure from the medical groups was over 600,000. And in a sense, this is what Brooke is saying. Remember, we had this report that one of the soldiers was saying, we were told we should kill males between the age 18 and 35. Mm. And so you actually have a commitment to wipe out a generation. There are over 2,000 doctors in Iraq who have been killed since the beginning of this war. There are close to 1 million Iraqis, many of them professionals, scientists, engineers, doctors, teachers, who had the capability to leave the country who have done so. And so you see the destruction, and now they're talking about a further attack on Iran. And it becomes clear that we're not dealing with people who really are serious about trying to secure the American people. They're serious about a permanent war. Now, I want to go back to Tirana. Because in Seattle, we've seen something that goes beyond the campus. We've seen another side of this, which is the takeover of the so-called independent weekly newspapers. And there is a paper up there that I call The Strangler, which has been basically inciting people to attack our organizing. Do you have anything new to tell us on that from what we're doing up there?
Yeah, I can say a couple things on that. One is that I went to this Democratic awards ceremony last night where Senator Russ Feingold spoke, and you know, all of the state officials and Democratic Party hack, et cetera, were there. And one younger man from my district, the 46th district, who has seen us and knows us and likes what we're doing, he brought up to me the Stranger article. He had seen it, and he also brought up this line that was put out in the article, which is, you know, oh, well, there's nothing really harmful about a couple people expressing their opinions playfully with, you know, throwing water balloons at you and dumping flour on your table. You know, it's just freely expressing their opinions. And this is the insidious idea that has been spread in these media attacks against us in a, you know, passing it off as sort of a playful, ha, 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 these kids are just trying to have fun with the LaRouches, and then they are pressing charges, you know, how horrible of them, which is a very dangerous idea because it's promoting, it is indirectly promoting attacks against our movement, which is one of the which is the only political movement out on the streets discussing real ideas, especially with the youth population. So, and I would say that reflected in this kind of, these kind of articles that are being put out and the responses to our pamphlet, which we're getting now from, for instance, the editor of The Stranger, who also, you know, wrote some sort of a cynical response about, oh, they figured us out. You know, we are the Anglo-Dutch liberals and we're connected with the Ruxin group. And
is that a new paper?
It was a blog on the internet response from Dan Savage, and you know, at the end he says, "Well, we would have gotten away with it too if it weren't for those darn LaRouche Youth Movement kids." But you know, on below this sort of cynical response and this cynical so-called playful articles that are being put out, what is reflected is what LaRouche is constantly getting at as the disease of sophistry afflicting our whole culture, which I would say is also kind of seems like what Pavel's bringing up of what they're facing on campuses with the young people, because the young people in universities are completely getting indoctrinated in this idea that, you know, well, they might be saying, you know, to kill hundreds of thousands of Muslims, but, you know, maybe that's what should be done, or maybe, you know, at least they should be allowed to say it, shouldn't they? And this kind of thing, which on the surface, there's nothing explicitly stated that, you know, shows that these people are complete liars. But what's not being said is what's at fault with this kind of ideology.
Mm-hmm. I think the other part of this question of the stranger is that this is the takeover of these weeklies was done through networks connected to John Train, and that they're, including the Village Voice, they're firing people at these newspapers who were actually investigative reporters who wrote about some real things. The Village Voice was one of the papers that exposed the spy operation that was being done in San Francisco about a decade ago by the Anti-Defamation League, where they were infiltrating police departments. So there are some real stories. At the Village Voice, they fired the reporters who were doing studies on or reports on what Bush was doing. So we're on the LaRouche Show. We've got just about 13 minutes to go. We're having a roundtable discussion of the continued mobilization that we're going to carry right through the election and actually until this new generation of leadership is established in a position to actually change these policies. And hopefully November 7th, you'll vote, you'll get other people to vote, we'll get a landslide, and we'll be able to take down the Bush-Cheney administration completely. Pavel, when, you know, Boston is considered one of the most liberal cities in the country. A lot of the Democrats are very smug because they say, well, we're in control here. But is there a sense, when you're out organizing and talking to people there, do they have a sense that this Bush-Cheney administration is doing irreparable damage to the country, or is this complacency still a dominant factor?
I think there are a lot of people who are pretty angry at what the Bush-Cheney administration is doing, but at the same time, the funny thing is a lot of people say, yeah, these Democrats, I mean, they can't fight, you know, when we say, well, yeah, they need to have balls, you know, and people say, yeah, I know what you mean. So it's, this is a pretty, you know, accurate estimate or qualification of the situation that Republicans right now, you know, they're posed to lose, but Democrats really, they don't have the leadership. They're not really winners of the situation. So,
well, let me ask any of the three of you. There was a recent article in the Executive Intelligence Review on the isotope economy, which raised a fascinating picture of how we actually can go beyond the situation of scarce resources into a new approach to production and usage of materials, physical materials on the planet that will get at this question of eliminating shortages and scarcity, which of course is what's going to be needed because we are running out of certain kinds of raw materials, fossil fuels, and so on. Are students able to discuss these things? Do they get excited about the ideas of great projects, of infrastructure, of science? Anyone of the three of you?
I actually did get a lot of good responses from all types of different students who didn't even have science backgrounds, this is a conceptual discussion of what even isotopes are, the fact that these things exist. It's a whole, it's kind of an unexplored, kind of undiscovered domain for man to, you know, to know about and to just really revolutionize the way that we as a species, you know, act in the universe and the solar system. And it's something that's not really present in the education, this or talked about in the culture, this idea of being able to discover that there's new principles to be discovered. There's kind of a sense amongst people, even though they don't know anything, that everything's already known. And
so are you using this to take on the idea of a no future generation?
Yeah, it really is. It is provoking just that. Is that because what you get from a sense of an undiscovered principle, like, wow, there's this whole domain of knowledge or principle, which you can use, as we go through and Jonathan goes through in that article, you can, it would transform radically the way we deal with everything in the economy. That immediately does present the sense that, whoa, wait a minute, there's something ahead. There's something to do. There is a future. There's certain things for mankind to accomplish yet. And that was one thing I was saying when you were bringing up earlier, Harley, this stuff about what you guys were talking about on the campuses, because it isn't normal for the students to be so apathetic. Like when you were going over the policies of this administration, it's not a natural thing. It's just not normal for youth to just be like, well, I'm going to a party tonight. Sorry, I can't make it to your political meeting. That's not normal. And there's really an attack that's been done on this question of the nature of man, but also all the possible discoveries we as a generation could be making. That there's just an endless amount of problems to be solved right now in the world. And that's one thing I've been finding people actually wanted me to email it to them. And I was talking to women and men who have really no science backgrounds even. I'm like, wow, send me that article. I think the actual...
Well, our listeners can get copies of that if... especially though, I want to give out this number again for people to get the new pamphlet on the Lynn Cheney, John Train War Party. Call us at 800-929-7566. We've got 7 minutes or so, 7.5 minutes to go. I'd like to just go around to all three of you and see what's coming up. I mean, Pavel, I assume we're going to be visiting this conference the next 2 days. There's still meeting in the Boston area. We have anything? Don't give away any secrets now about what we're planning, but I assume we're going to be there.
Yeah, I think we're going to be there. We are. We have some things to ask these people.
But I think you learned something yesterday from watching Brooke. The same thing that some of the youth members from the West Coast had ran into with talking to Horowitz. It's hard to get these guys to actually say what they really think and what they really intend, because when you pin them down, they lie. But Horowitz did say he thought it was right to use nuclear bombs on Hiroshima, and we may have to nuke Iran. So I think a lot of what we have to do is talk to the audience and organize the audience to see what these guys are actually saying. Did you get a sense of that from last night at Tufts?
Yeah, exactly the same thing. Also... today, that's why today because Daniel Pines was talking about all that, and he was talking about how you're going to promote, you know, moderate Muslims or Western Muslims, but at the same time, you know, he was on the same panel with Aaron Brook and this guy Lewis that he brought up earlier, who was saying the greatest moral act in human history was the nuking of Japan. And, you know, so I asked him, do you support that? What are you actually saying? And he tried to escape that. And then I asked him directly, well, do you support a military strike on Iran? He said yes.
Mm-hmm.
So it is pretty. They're very unwilling to actually.
Right, but you did get him to admit that. You see. It's interesting, isn't it? They're saying, we want the Muslims to be moderate, so if you're not moderate, we'll blow you up. Now, become moderate. That doesn't seem to me to be Western culture. Nick, how about UCLA or Los Angeles, San Diego, the Southern California in general? What are the plans coming up?
Yeah, we're going to be hitting actually San Diego this week. I think there's about 40,000 students down at UCSD, and we're going to be getting out at least 100 bundles down there. I think we're going to do a couple day deployment at least, so we'll have it a bit sustained over a couple days. UCLA, we're going to hit again on Tuesday this time, so you'll get a different round of classes. This week we did it Monday, and we're going to do a lot of singing again during the midday, because I think we are starting to create an audience there with the music and the pamphlets. And then we're also going to go up to Santa Barbara, which is north, of course, in the other direction, and do a major deployment on that campus. And I don't know. I think Americans, and especially youth, can respond to this stuff. I think we're in kind of an interesting moment where, people, I think there's a bit of a prescience amongst people that they do have to make a decision whether they're going to actually do something about this. And we're provoking, and the economic crash is occurring in all this context. And in a sense, people are going to have to choose fascism or a new system.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're generally planning this week. It should generate a whole new round of effects, I think.
And Toronto in the Northwest?
Well, we also have planned to go to Western Washington University next week, which is north, and completely saturate that campus, as well as Evergreen College, which is south in the deep depths of a forest. And
isn't that
then
called Hemp University?
What's that?
Isn't it called Hemp University now?
Yeah, that's the real name for it.
Yeah.
It says much more about it. And then we're going to continue also our siege on a University of Washington campus, as well as continuing having a chorus like they're doing in California. We had that as well last week, and it had a very good effect, bringing some beauty to the students.
Now, Tarana, just very quickly, I know that one of the key elections for the Democrats to take the Congress has become the race to unseat Republican Reichardt.
Mm-hmm.
Are we deploying into that district at all?
Yeah, absolutely. One thing of note, it's just of interest, is that last night, Darcy Berner, who's the Democratic candidate, was just endorsed by the Seattle PI when the Times had endorsed Dave Reichert, which is interesting. But more importantly, what we're doing, there's a community college there that we've been going to regularly, and also the surrounding area, and to a lot of areas where, people are sort of sick of hearing about politics. But when we actually talk about what we're doing, that's what brings people back to the fight, is ideas as opposed to personal attacks on the sheriff or something like this.
Well, we're down to just under 2 minutes. I want to thank the panelists for joining us today, and I have a few more remarks on the approach toward the elections. But Pavel, Nick, and Tarana, thanks for being on the LaRouche Show today. I'm sure that the listeners are going to want to know how these battles are shaping up. And we'll continue to keep a close eye on what's happening on the campuses. And we may have you guys back on, or some of your colleagues back on, in the next couple of weeks to see how this is going. Let me just conclude the LaRouche Show for today with the following thoughts. What we've seen in the last couple of days with the Yaron Brooks statement, with, as Pavel just reported, Dr. John Lewis saying we should strike Iran, Pipes has that view, kill off the so-called extremists, and if you take some of the moderates with them, it's better for the remaining moderates, and so on. We are dealing with a bunch of people who are Nazis. They have the same fascist outlook. This is what Lynn Cheney represents. This is what John Train represents, a return to the policies that were imposed by the same kind of bankers and financiers on Germany, Italy, and Spain in the 1930s. Our fathers, our parents and grandparents fought a war against fascism under the direction of Franklin Roosevelt. And Roosevelt's ideas for the future were destroyed when Harry Truman came in. We're still fighting that fight as the Truman era is coming to an end. I would encourage our listeners to take the time between now and November 7th to organize for a Democratic landslide in that election, but more importantly, give the backing that's needed for the LaRouche youth to become the leaders in the future. Give us a call at 800-929-7566, and we'll be on again next Saturday with the LaRouche Show. Thank you.